You've tuned in to Naturopathic Earth Radio with certified health consultant and former obese child, A. Gregory Luna, where you get the latest on clean living, natural remedies, effective weight loss tips, and sound naturopathic principles from experts and biohackers from around the world and Gregory himself. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of the shackles of Big Food and start your journey now to a long, vibrant, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathic Earth.
Hello, everybody. This is A. Gregory Luna. Of course, you can call me Gregory. And welcome back to another episode of NPE Radio and Occult Health News. I hope you are doing well today. Before we begin talking about nosocomial infections and how they kill a quarter of a million Americans a year, let's go over the housekeeping. The website is Naturopathic Earth. Just Google NPE Radio and it'll pop right up. Visit the site. There's tons of wellness articles and recipes and My Confessions of an Obese Child book, which you can get for free by just subscribing to receive articles and your podcast directly sent to your phone. I'll give you a free copy of my memoirs, Confessions of an Obese Child. For those of you who don't know, if you're new to the podcast series, I was a very morbidly obese child and adolescent, and around the age of 17, I lost about 110 pounds. And I've kept it off now for 27 plus years. So that podcast series and the memoir talks about my experiences being bullied as a child. And then it talks about the coping mechanisms of which I developed after I lost my weight. Because people, you just don't wake up one day like, oh my God, I lost 120 pounds and now I know how to eat well and I don't have disordered eating. And now I don't see myself as a fat person in a skinny person's body. It doesn't work like that. So it's a good read. I talk about some of the funny things and traumatic things that happened to me as a kid. So definitely give me your email and your name. And of course, we don't sell that to third parties because honestly, I don't know how to do it even if I wanted to do it. And you get a free copy of that. Also, we do have a Patreon account. If you click on the episode description, there's a link to the Patreon account there. You can donate $1 to $5 a month. That would mean a lot if you can do that. And I want to mention really quickly, I did change the name of the podcast series to MP Radio and Occult Health News. Now, we are not going to be talking about Aleister Crowley or Anton LaVey's Book of Satan, and we're not going to be talking about the occult. For those of you who don't know, the word occult simply means hidden. Hidden. Like you can have occult hematuria, which means blood in your urine. You look at the urine, the gross view of it, G-R-O-S-S, not like it's gross, but gross, and you might not see it, but it's occult. It's hidden. So what I'm doing is I'm tinkering with the title of the podcast. We're still Naturopathic Earth Radio. And the reason I'm doing that is because I've wholly still endorsed naturopathy. Then don't get me wrong. And I always believe that drugs and surgery should be the last measure that we do when we are diagnosed with a malady and not the first. And as you know very well, I am not a strong proponent of the typical sick care industry. But I added occult health news because I want to talk about things that are not talked about. All these episodes, especially if you look at the last 30, when we talk about Propecia leading to sexual dysfunction, we talk about the revolving door between Big Pharma and government, we talk about the connection between psychotropic drugs and school shootings and all the other ones, the dangers with Gardasil, the dangers with the flu shot, the dangers with oral contraceptives, all these things. These are things you don't hear about. And I like covering health news, but stuff that's hidden, hence the name Occult Health News. So I am going to change the intro music and the extra music for the podcast because it has the old name and also has my old social media account profile names, my handles. So for any of you who want to know, my Twitter name now is Occult Health New. I couldn't get the S. And on Instagram, I'm Occult Health News. And on Facebook, the page is still Naturopathic Earth Radio and Occult Health News. I only added that part, so that hasn't changed. So you can reach me in any of those. And I actually created a Pinterest account, too. And next thing you know, I'm going to be getting manicures and pedicures. All right, so let's talk about all these deaths by nosocomial infections. All right, there's a couple of reasons why I want to bring up this topic for this episode. As some of you know, as much as you know, I am a medical teacher. And I was at a coffee shop today and I was talking to the coffee girl and I was explaining to her what I teach in high school. They're like, so you're the science teacher? I'm like, no. Are you the health teacher? I'm like, no, I'm the medical teacher. And most people just don't know that there are medical classes offered in high schools. Most large, here in Texas, we call them 6A, which is the largest high schools, have medical classes. So I take my students to the largest hospital here in San Antonio. And prior to them going to the hospital, witnessing surgeries and births and all that, we cover the stuff to prep them for them. And so we cover hospital-acquired infections, HAIs, otherwise known as the fancier name of nosocomial infections. Now, nosocomial infections are infections that somebody gets when they go to the hospital. So they walk in without it, and they get it when they're there. And people are astonished by how many people die in the hospital because of an infection that they get there. This isn't like 13th century Paris where the nuns are running the first, I guess we call them prototype hospitals, or even going back to ancient Rome, where they were filthy. And if you even go all the way to Joseph Lister in the late 19th century before antisepsis and all that, I mean, hospitals were filthy. If you ever watch the show The Nick, which takes place around 1900, it well demonstrates how disgusting hospitals were. But hospitals are supposed to be cleaner now, yet people still die. All right, so we're going to glean from an article from the Washington Post, the veritable Washington Post, and it is titled, Medical Errors Now Third Leading Cause of Death in the United States. Number three, can you guess what the first two are? Well, let's play Family Feud style. First guess, cancer, ding, 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 ding. That's number two. And heart disease is number one, both of which are preventable, which we'll talk about at the end of the podcast. But third leading cause of death in Los Estados Unidos. So let's get to it. Nightmare stories of nurses giving potent drugs meant for one patient to another and surgeons removing the wrong body parts have dominated recent headlines about medical care. Lest you assume those cases are the exception, a new study by patient safety researchers provides some context. Their analysis, published in the BMJ on Tuesday, shows that, quote, medical errors, close quote, in hospitals and other healthcare facilities are incredibly common and may now be the third leading cause of death in the United States, claiming 251,000 lives every year. More than respiratory disease, accidents, strokes, and Alzheimer's. Marta McCary, a professor of surgery at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, who led the research, said in an interview that the category includes everything from bad doctors to more systemic issues such as communication breakdowns when patients are handed off from one department to another. Quote, it boils down to people dying from the care that they receive rather than the disease for which they are seeking care. Close quote. The issue of patient safety has been a hot topic in recent years, but it wasn't always that way. In 1999, an Institute of Medicine report, the IOM, calling preventable medical errors an epidemic, shocked the medical establishment and led to significant debate about what could be done. Well, let's see if the debate led to anything important. The IOM, based on one study, estimated deaths because of medical errors as high as 98,000 a year. 98,000? That's nothing. That's like the good old halcyon days if we get back down to 98K. McCary's research involves a more comprehensive analysis of four large studies, including ones by the Health and Human Service Department Officer of the Inspector General and the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality that took place between 2000 and 2008. His calculation of 251,000 deaths equates to nearly 700 deaths a day, about 9.5% of all deaths annually in the United States. Although all providers extol patient safety and highlights the various safety committees and protocols they have in place, few provide the public with specifics on actual cases of harm due to mistakes. Moreover, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention doesn't require reporting of errors in the data it collects about deaths through billing codes. making it hard to see what's going on the national level. The CDC not collecting that data, that's shocking. That is shocking. I thought the CDC was like this august establishment that is beyond reproach. The CDC should update its vital statistics reporting requirements so that physicians must report whether there was any error that led to a preventable death. Well, I mean, do you think it's in their common interest not to update and make it more patent and have better visibility when there is an F up by the hospital or doctor? Probably not, because you're going to be looking at more lawsuits and more litigation. Quote, we all know how common it is, he said, but we also know how infrequently it's openly discussed. Shocking. Kenneth Sands, who directs healthcare quality at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, Deaconess, an affiliate of Harvard Medical School, said that the surprising things about medical errors is the limited change that has taken place since the IOM report in the 90s. That's surprising. Only hospital-acquired infections have shown improvement. Okay, that's good. That's good. The HAIs, the nosocomials, that showed improvement. Quote, the overall numbers haven't changed, though, and that's discouraging and alarming. Sands, who was not involved in the study published in the BMJ, formerly known as the British Medical Journal, said that one of the main barriers is the tremendous diversity and complexity in the way healthcare is delivered. Yeah, maybe that's the case, or maybe you just have incompetent people running things, especially on the lower levels, like on the CNAs and maybe even the nurses and stuff like that. And you have an overworked staff, even well-intentioned overworked staff. There, quote, there's just been a higher degree of tolerance for variability in practice when you see in another industry, in any other industry, he explained. When passengers get on a plane, there's a standard way attendants move around, talk to them, and prepare them for flights, Sand says. Yet such standardization isn't seen at hospitals. That makes it tricky to figure out where errors are occurring and how to fix them. The government should work with institutions to try to find ways to improve the situation. Now, I don't think a federal mandate or some sort of legislation is really going to improve things. This should be hospital system to hospital system, or even hospital to hospital. How, I mean, this is typical like liberal big government solution. Now, let's have this gigantic federal Leviathan that we create, and that's somehow going to make it less likely for Sandy to prescribe the wrong drug or administer the wrong drug to patient Doe. No, it's not going to trickle down there. This needs to be on a hospital level, on a microcosmic local level, on a hospital level. Measuring the problem is the absolute first step, he said. Hospitals are currently investigating deaths where medical error could have been a cause, but they're also under-resourced. What we need to do is study patterns nationally. Frederick Van Pelt, a doctor who works for the Chartist Group, a healthcare consultancy, said another element of harm is often overlooked is the number of severe patient injuries resulting from medical error. Some estimates would put this number at 40 times the death rate. 40 times. Again, this gets buried in the daily exposure that care providers have around patients who are suffering or in pain that is to be expected following procedures. 40 times. Okay, let's take a quickie and then we're going to actually cover some specific infections. You know how many people died in Vietnam? 50,000 Americans. 50,000. So we're looking at 5 times the amount annually. Annually. Is this a form of population control? I mean, we know that they're getting us from the beginning of life with all the contraceptives and the abortions, and go back to that episode of the myth of overpopulation. But I guess this is like a euthanasia way to, well, let's just kind of weed out from the top and the sick by just making some mistakes. Now, I don't mean to be flippant, and I'm not saying that the vast majority of these people aren't doing it intentionally. This isn't Kevorkian. This isn't euthanasia. But if you just look at the the numbers, it is daunting and frightening anytime you ever have to be hospitalized. All right, so we're going to cover some of the specific infections that are pretty pervasive in these hospitals. Staphylococcus aureus or MRSA. I think some of you guys have heard of MRSA. It's methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. It's like one of those, say that fast five times. And staph, we call it staph, right? Staph. Staph used to only be in hospitals, and it's a type of bacteria. And now you find staph infections in pervasive in high school, like high school showers, for example, and communal places like that. It's very common. Then you got Pseudomonas, Aeruginosa, and E. coli. Some of these are pretty common. Sometimes the most common actual infections that people get, like they go in, they don't have it, but they come out with UTIs. And you think, oh, UTIs, great, it's not a big deal. Every girl gets a UTI. But the problem with UTIs, especially when you're old, is that lots of times it's asymptomatic or the old people just don't know any better because they think they've always had itchiness and stinky urine. And so the bacteria travels up to the ureters, to the kidneys, and causes a kidney infection. And then if you have a serious kidney infection, you're screwed. You're dead. You're going to die, probably. Respiratory pneumonia is another common one. Surgical site wound infections, bacteremia, sepsis. This is going to be like bacterial infections of the blood. Gastrointestinal infections, skin infections. You might have heard of decubitus ulcers. These are when someone lies in one position, let's say supine or on their back the whole day, they develop these wounds, these openings, because there's too much weight being put on that skin, and that can lead to a wound, and then that leads to an infection because there's, you know, creepy crawlies all through these hospitals, and then the people die from that too. The probably the most famous one now is C. diff, Clostridium difficile. And I love talking about C. diff to my students. So C. diff is a type of bacteria, it's a pathogenic bacteria that commonly inhabits the intestines, the large intestine in particular. It's like an inflammation of the colon of which it causes. And C. diff can kill you. It can kill you. It makes you essentially have horrible cramping and diarrhea until you die. You know, it's like diarrhea by death by diarrhea. Now, the old way we used to treat C. diff was giving broad-spectrum antibiotics. But as you guys know, if you go back to episode one on probiotics, what the effects of antibiotics are on our body, it's an atomic bomb that wipes out our probiotic bacteria. And so how do you think you're going to be helping a person who's got C. diff by dropping an atomic bomb, which is going to decimate their probiotic bacteria and their microbiome? And typically, like Billy Joel says, only the good die young. Typically, the good bacteria die quicker than the pathogenic. So you drop this atomic bomb in their gut, and the bad bacteria, the C. diff, survives, and it just wreaks more havoc. And then they keep giving antibiotics and antibiotics and antibiotics, and it doesn't work. So now what they've been doing is poop transplants. And so what they essentially do in poop transplants, and I love making it like really grotesque and graphic for the kids, but there's different ways they do it. But essentially what they do is they get a donor feces, and let's say they get your feces because you have a good balance of probiotic bacteria and some pathogenic, but overall you have healthy poop, and they'll extract it from you, and then they put the person under, and through a colonoscope or a colonoscopy, they'll inject that your feces into the person with C. diff. And what that does is that introduces probiotic bacteria, good bacteria, and that helps restore balance in the force, restore balance in the patient's gut, which has been decimated by C. diff and all the antibiotics. Now, people are like, oh, man, could I donate my poop? And actually, you can. It's pretty rigorous, but there are fecal labs, and you can get like $40 a specimen. It's almost like donating your sperm or your eggs, right? But you can donate your poop. Now, it's pretty rigorous to get through the different steps because they only want the gold standard of feces. But once you donate your poop, you take it to a lab and they kind of whisk it up and make it liquefied before it's administered. It's not like you're just jamming a turkey baster up your anus and extracting your poop and then, you know, shoving it into whoever has C. diff, you bring them over to your house. I mean, there are people, it's been known that people have used turkey basters to do it. But this is typically done in a hospital or outpatient setting. The other thing you can do is you can do fecal pills. So let's say there's more of an infection of the upper GI tract, or let's say in the duodenum or the ileum in the small intestines and stomach, and you can do fecal pills. So the point is that this is revolutionary. This is saving a lot of lives of people who get hospital acquired or nosocomial infections. Is introducing another person's poop. Yeah. So just so you know, FYI, this is now the gold standard in treating C. diff. And look, I don't have a problem with it. It's very kind of primitive in its working, its utilitarianism, but it works. And so I'm totally for that. Totally for that. Okay, so let's finish up the episode. All right, so let's go back. I had mentioned the top 10 diseases that kill Americans. So let's knock this out. So this is per year. Number one, heart disease takes about 614,000 Americans a year. Okay, right behind it is cancer, which is about 591. So let's say they're both around 600,000 a year. Then you got a significant drop down to the nosocomial or hospital-acquired infections or iatrogenic. Iatrogenic errors are errors done by doctors. So that's going to be a quarter of a mil. Still, it is sizable. It reminds me of Stalin's quote. He says, one death is a tragedy, 1,000 is a statistic. Because the brain can't fathom this. 250,000. Like, you can kind of fathom the heart disease. Oh, well, you know, he ate crap and he smoked and he just had a heart attack and that happened, you know, because that fairy that comes and sprinkles disease dust on us randomly just happened to spread it on him. Of course, we don't even want to talk about lifestyle decisions that cause this, but it's one thing when heart disease or cancer takes you. But for medical error, there's really no explanation. Now, there is an accreditation organization called JACO. And JACO, I used to work in the hospital, and then even when my students go there, JACO is like this annual accreditation group that comes and essentially reviews hospitals to make sure they can be accredited for another year. And when JACO comes, the hospital, everybody's nervous because they come and they inspect everything and they make sure all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, and they can even interview students and they can interview any employee and all that. So look, I'm not saying attempts aren't being made to make hospitals cleaner, but... The proof is in the pudding. Still, a quarter of a million are dying. So that's 251,000. Then after that, it's respiratory disease, which is 147,000. Then accidents. This is probably going to be motor vehicle or just falling down the stairs. 136,000. Then stroke, 133,000. Alzheimer's, 100,000. Diabetes, 76,000. Flu, pneumonia, 55,000. Now, okay, don't freak out. Oh, Gregory, you got to take the flu shot. The flu shot is completely inefficacious, and it's loaded with toxins. Go back to that episode. I think it's in the 40s, MP, and a cold health news. Number 45, 50, around there, we talk about why you shouldn't take the flu shot. Kidney disease is 48,000, and then suicide is 42,000, which is very sad, 42,000. So look, heart disease, cancer, the first, second, fifth, sixth, Alzheimer's, seven, diabetes. These are preventable diseases, and this is something I try to inculcate into the students and to the audience as much as I can. Going back to the fairy, we have this idea that some fairy comes to us at age 60, 65, and just sprinkles some disease dust on us. Sprinkle, sprinkle, oh, you're going to get stroke in 3 years. Sprinkle, sprinkle, oh, you're going to get Hashimoto's thyroid problem. Sprinkle, sprinkle, oh, you're going to have cancer. It's not like that. This is what the sick care and the conventional allopathic medicine people want you to believe. Most of these diseases are preventable. Heart disease. We know what leads to heart disease. Smoking, obesity, eating inflammatory vegetable oils, a lot of processed food, a lot of processed meat, arguably perhaps red meat. I mean, we know what causes heart disease. Cancer, obesity, high sugar diet, household toxins, yes, age, yes, hereditary stuff. But the large majority of new cases of cancer are people, especially in breast cancer, doesn't run in their family. Doesn't run in their family. It is preventable. Stroke, same thing on the cardiovascular stuff. The CVA, same thing. Preventable. Alzheimer's. I go back to that episode I did on saunas and steam rooms. They call it type 3 diabetes. The studies are showing that if you have a high sugar, high carb diet, and you're not going keto when you're getting older, and you're not doing cerebral mental exercises like crossword puzzles, and you're not moving your body. These are all things that can reduce your chances of Alzheimer's. Now, will it eradicate it?
Probably not, but it lowers your chances. Diabetes, same thing. We talked about this way back when on diabetes. Type 2 adult diabetes, you're not going to hear this from your doctor, is possibly reversible, even within 6 months. Just change your diet, increase your activity. These are things you can do. There's certain spices that are high on the ORAC scale that can help. There's cinnamon, which helps regulate your blood glucose levels. These are things that can happen. But ultimately, when it comes to all of these, the person is left with a decision. They have to look in the mirror and say, okay, let's just use diabetes, for example, or heart disease. Okay, you're 45. You weigh 300 pounds. You have a choice. Start losing the weight, even if it's bariatric surgery. Start losing the weight. Radically change your diet. For example, more produce, maybe keto. Increase your exercise. Stop smoking. Stop vaping. Stop drinking alcohol. Eliminate your sugars, especially the processed ones. And your heart disease will ameliorate. At the least, you're not going to be on the same path. Same thing for diabetes. Same thing for cancer. Get off the sugars. Get away from your routers. Get away from the fluoride. Get away from the hormone disruptors. Get away from all that garbage. Okay, but we don't want to hear that. Most people, when you tell them like diabetes, like over here in San Antonio, diabetes is so pervasive. You tell the typical San Antonian who has diabetes, okay, look, here's your choice. You can take Humalog or Lantus or your insulin or glucophage, one of these drugs, and you can keep drinking all your beer and eating garbage, or change your diet, stop smoking, exercise, and maybe within 6 months, your blood glucose will be fine, and your H1C, the one that measures the long-term blood sugar, these can be lowered. But most people, they don't want to do that. They just rely on the drugs. Like, no, that's okay. I just want to keep taking the drugs because I want to keep drinking my Bud Light. And so what's sad about this is if you look at these diseases, the ones that kill most Americans, they're all preventable. We require more forbearance, more self-restraint, more judicious behavior, but they are preventable. And when it comes to nosocomial infections, hospital-acquired infections, there is no excuse. If this is your 12-year-old going in because they broke their radius and they get freaking MRSA or necrotizing fasciitis or something like that, and they end up getting their arm chopped off for it, you're not going to be so forgiving. This is something we should not tolerate. And this should be in the news more. There should be demand for change. Instead of talking about, oh, Trump in Canada, Trudeau and Trump are fighting, oh, Trump's in North Korea. None of that matters. That's the Republicans and the Republicans fighting, the mirage fighting that the ruling elite want you to get distracted on. Stuff like this, the nosocomial deaths, and almost every episode that we do on this podcast, these are the things we need to be talking about, ladies and gentlemen. But of course we don't, or we talk about it in very little by the mainstream news, or it's all diffused out by different outlets, or maybe it's talked about in, you know, alternative media. But as a whole, it's not talked about. If you go down the street, ask your neighbor, hey, do you know 250,000 Americans die every year because of a hospital-acquired infection? So they're going to have any idea because, again, we're all addicted to TV. We're all glued to the boob tube. And if we don't hear it on TV, we don't believe it. If I mention it, oh, I'm a conspiracy quack because people are too lazy to actually look up the facts. Either way, it's frustrating. And I know I go on the diatribes at the end of these sometimes, but I'm passionate, guys. I am passionate. And that passion is matched by my passion for you to share these episodes with your friends. You continue to listen to these episodes for a reason, because I don't think you think because I'm some stellar podcaster. It's because the information you're getting from me is maybe you're not getting it from anywhere else or from few outlets. So share these episodes. Tell people about these episodes. Tell people about the podcast. And as always, hit the subscribe button. I would appreciate it. And please, please, guys, it takes you literally 20 seconds to post a review for MP Radio and Occult Health News, and it means a lot to me. The more reviews I get, the higher up I go on the iTunes or the Stitcher rankings, meaning more people can hear these podcasts. Now, is this going to make me lucrative? Am I going to quit my very lucrative teaching job? No, I'm not selling anything on my website. I'm not selling anything. I just want people to know this information. So please visit my social media outlets. They're all at Occult Health News. Visit me, friend me on Facebook at Albert Gregory, and share these podcasts and please post a review. Until next time, guys, take care. God bless. Take care. Bye-bye.
Earth Radio. Visit us at www.naturopathicearth.com. Follow us on Twitter at Naturopath Earth and subscribe to us on iTunes. Don't forget to leave a review. And remember our core belief at naturopathicearth.com. Let food be thy medicine, let nature be thy healer. See you next time. Music courtesy of Art of Escapism.